Treasures Radio is on the air.
All systems go.
Saturday night, the 25th of January, 2014, and welcome to the Tinker Shop here on Just Measures Radio. And, of course, as always, this is the Tinker, and I have my able assistant Tinkerbell here hiding in the background, to help me out as needed. So, well, tonight, what we're going to be doing is we're going to be talking about gardening and gardening tools. And I'm also going to be putting in a few of the requests that I got last night for a few pieces of music that people wanted to hear. So with that said, let me go ahead and get started here. I'm going to go ahead and going to put the link here into the chat room. And that'll get you out to the website, out to www.arlinn-tower.com and then /TTinkers_shop. And so we'll give everybody a chance here for a few seconds to get there. And again, as always, go ahead and scroll down to near the bottom of the page, and there will be a link there that says handheld garden tools. So, yes. I'm not sure exactly how far we'll get tonight. I'll probably do my usual thing of over-planning what I want to talk about. But I always figure it's better to have more stuff prepped up than not enough. So, see, first thing I should probably say, here we are. We're in the last week in January. You know, obviously, we're still in the dead of winter. But, you know, spring is coming. So is summer. Seems like a long way away yet, but you know, planting season, depending on where we're all located at, isn't that far away. Up here in Wisconsin, we're looking at, let's see, what would be, 4 weeks before the last frost, which is usually somewhere in mid-May. So we're talking mid-April. A lot of us are going to have to be getting our plants started before then. And those of you further south than me, well, you know, depends on your area. Matter of fact, this next week I'll probably be talking a little bit more about gardening and starting plants. So at that point, I'll have a link that I'll be able to put into the chat room that, well, you'll be able to look up the anticipated last frost dates for your areas. It's kind of useful information. Why don't we go ahead and get started here? Okay, so, like I said, tonight what we're going to be talking about is garden tools. And, again, first little device that you'll see here on the webpage is, looks like some sort of medieval torture device or nail remover. But this is a Japanese gardening tool. It's referred to as a weed and root pick tool. And this is basically a pretty small fork that you can actually dig down next to roots or weeds and literally, if you want, cut them off below the ground level and to yank them out. And like I have here, it's, you know, it says here that's, you know, overall length from one end of the handle to the point, you know, about 7.5 inches. So it's not a very large tool, but it can be useful. There's also another tool which has a similar function that's more of a European or more of an Anglo design, I'll put it that way, that a lot of people use them for getting rid of dandelions. Again, it'll have a, you know, a standard handle, almost like what you'd find on a file, but it's about, oh, roughly about a foot long overall, and the end would be, if you're going to make one yourself, you take like a chunk of 5/16 or 3/8 inch rod, you'd heat it up, you'd hammer it flat, working just on one side on your anvil. You don't flip it around, you just keep hammering it, you mushroom it out at the end. Once it's cooled off, you can take and semi-point it, basically make like an eye shape, you know, human eye type shape. And in there you would take, oh, let's see here, a chisel. In this case, since you let it cool, you'd shape it, and then you take and make like a V at one end of this with using a cold chisel, which would leave you with a sharp edge. The other end would go into your handle, which, like I said, could be something like is used for a file, and you can use that for actually digging out dandelions and other weeds that you want to get out of your yard or your garden or whatever. Actually, your garden, if you've prepped it properly, it should be pretty loose. You should be able to pull the weeds out by hand. But if it gets a little too dry after a rain, you know, the soil can get hard, so something like that is useful. Okay, so let's move on down here a little bit. Next couple of blocks here, I got two more Japanese tools. And they're fairly similar in looks. You know, not totally, but somewhat similar. The first one they refer to as the sickle straight edge. And again, the blade size on here is about 3 inches long. And overall, with the handle, it's another 6 inches, so you probably have roughly a 7-inch overall. And this is used for harvesting, you know, crops. Say, for example, well, me, I'm always carrying at least one knife, but you know, if a person's just going to be strictly gardening and have a large garden plot, something like this would work great for doing things, say, like broccoli, cauliflower, and any of these other crops of that sort. You can use it also for, oh, say, corn. Now, again, if you're, after a while, your wrists are going to get pretty tired if you're pulling corn from the stalks. Something like this, you can just grab the ear, whack, and you can cut it off. So it's it's a nice tool. Next one down here is a large reaping hook. Now this would be used again for, oh, say, clearing, you know, heavier weed patches prior to prepping the ground. Grab the handful of weeds, you whack it off, and you know, it's good for clearing an area. And actually, when you look at this thing, it's a little smaller than the North American corn knife, but a corn knife was used for like cutting stalks and shocking them, you know, where you'd cut, you know, 10, 12, as many corn stalks as you can move along and carry. And then you'd take and tie them up and leave them stacked in the field for drying. You know, like I said, this is similar in looks and would function much the same way, except that this does not have a serrated edge like a corn knife would have. So, like I said, it's you know, largely used for basically, you know, reaping hook. You know, it'd be used, imagine they probably use it a lot for like rice, if they're going to be, you know, harvesting the rice in the stalks and taking them to some place where it's going to be, you know, threshed out. It'd be used for that sort of thing. Okay, and we can move on down here. And by the way, if anyone has any questions, go ahead and relay them to Tinkerbell. And she's just kind of giving me a wave, so I'm not sure if she had a question or if she... Okay, so she was just kind of let me know she was here and still watching the chat room. Okay, so we got a couple more things here that that we'll go ahead and cover, and then I'm going to go ahead and take care of a couple of requests people had, you know, last night. So the first one here, under other tools, is something called a hand plow. And these are actually made in both left and right-handed formats. And it's probably somewhat difficult to see, you know, if you can, you know, magnify your screen here, or, you know, blow up your image a little bit, you might be able to see it a little easier. But that actually is not a goofy photograph. That is actually what you're seeing. That thing is actually bent in three dimensions. You know, from the handle to the point on there, it's bent sort of back towards the handle, but cross-sectionally it's bent away from. And, like the notes I have in here. Now, this is where this tool was originated. I was in Korea, and it says where this tool originates. And this has been made and used there for about 2,000 years. It's known as a homi. You know, not what you hear down in the hood, you know, for a homi, but still. But anyhow, it translates as a little spear. It's almost a spear head shaped type of thing. And this, again, like I had here in the notes, that this leaf shaped blade is thin at the top, where it's the widest, and then thicker at the tip. And these opposing curves, like I said, you know, convex, side to side, and concave, top to bottom, gives it a lot more strength and stability. And again, that's one of the secrets we're working with thin metals. If you can get curves in there or bows in the metal in the proper directions, it strengthens it up unbelievably. It's, you know, a flat sheet, well, my grandson could do it anyway, but almost any little kid can take a flat sheet of tin and just, you know, basically fold the darn thing up until it's too thick for him. But if you get some curves built into it, it gets a little bit more difficult. And the last thing for this section is the Hori Hori knife. And that means dig dig. And again, these knives, they're like a heavier. It's multi-purpose. You can weed, you can plant, you can divide perennials, and you can cut sod. And what you have on there, again, it's probably rather difficult to see it in this photo, but it's actually a serrated edge on there. Basically, it's about a 5-inch or 7-inch saw blade, but it's also beveled for shoveling and kind of a nice little device. And again, you know, kind of a note here for it too, because I'll be mentioning some stuff similar to this later on if we get to it. But these handles, it's a wooden handle on these, and you can't really see it in this picture, but the tang, which is more or less the extension of the knife blade, which goes up inside the handle, this is probably a half tang in here, where the metal goes halfway up the length of the handle. And this is a wooden handle where the blade itself is riveted into place through holes in the handle and the tang of the knife blade. So let's see here. What time do we got here? We're over here at 18 past the hour already, so I think I'd better go ahead here and like I said, get my couple of my tunes in here. So let me do this. Since Concretin had asked me very nicely last night if he could get Scotland the Brave, we'll go ahead and do that one first. And we'll go ahead and put a commercial in at this point as well. And then we will carry on after that. So, enjoy, and we should be back here in, I'd say about 3.5 or 4 minutes, because that'll give me time enough to go get a drink and wet my whistle.
That's what I like to see, bullseyes, every time. And you can do the same thing with Beyer Barrels. As long as you do your part, the custom barrels that you get from Beyer Barrels will deliver award-winning accuracy shot after shot. Beyer Barrels specializes in standard and 1-in-9-inch twist match-grade 22 long rifle barrels for the Ruger 10-22 and AR-15. If you want to win, visit their site at BeyerBarrels.com. That's BeyerBarrels.com. Or you can call Clint at 360-374-9476 and tell him you heard it on the Shooting Bench, would you? Let him know that his advertising money is doing him some good.
Let's see here. 007, you had a question about what uses do you have for a broken hammer handle. Well, broken hammer handles, depending on how badly they're broken and where, you can always recycle them. You know, if it's, depending on the style. You know, because some of the hammer handles I use out in my shop, it's pretty much the same cross-section diameter most of the way, on some of my larger hammers. smaller ones, you know, the traditional nail-pulling hammer type thing, those are usually a little bit more of a wasp waste on the things. So it's a little bit more difficult to recycle those. You know, like I was saying, the ones that are pretty much the same length all the way down, well, it's just, if it's right by the head, I just cut it off and reshape it, and if I can reuse it, I can sometimes put it right back on the same hammer head. Because there's a few of mine that I've actually have deliberately shortened. A lot of people, they like having, you know, a good foot-long handle on a hammer. Well, I'm a little guy. I've shrunk, so, you know, so I'm only about 5'6" now. But I've always been a little guy, so long hammer handles were always uncomfortable for me, so I have a tendency of shortening them. But, yeah, hammer handles, it's good wood to keep around. You know, if nothing else, you can use them for spacers. But I would say if it's broken all the way off, cut it off and stash it. You know, you can always say, for example, if you decide to make some of the tools like I have pictures of here, you might be able to recycle one of those and, you know, make a handle for something else out of it. So it's, you know, something else I was thinking of. We were talking about splitting wood and whatnot. Here's an idea for you that might save some of your hammer handles. There's the, let's see, what do they call it? Closed cell extruded, I think it's either styrene or, oh, I'm trying to think of the other one. There's a pipe insulation you can get, like at a lot of hardware stores, for that you can put on your hot water pipes. And, you know, they have it in different sizes. And what you can, a cheap fix for this stuff, for saving hammer handles and sledgehammers and axe handles, is to get, you know, a couple of these, they almost look like a pool noodle, but they're not as big. You know, like I said, they're for copper piping. You get yourself some of those, get yourself a couple sizes of those, and like on a sledgehammer or an axe, you can take like about a 6 or 8 inch long chunk of that, basically cup it around your axe handle, and if necessary, use two of them, and wrap the heck out of it with duct tape. And that will, if you miss your splitting wedge, and you know, you overshoot the splitting wedge and you hit the wedge with your handle of your axe or your maul, that'll have a tendency of saving your handle. So, you know, it's a thought. And actually, with the littler ones, you can conceivably do the same thing on a smaller hammer. So, okay, so let's see here. I suppose I should probably continue on because I'm about less than a quarter of the way down my new page here tonight. So the next section, I just went ahead and labeled it European style tools. And this first one here is what's called a Cape Cod weeder. And there's a few of these here. Since I myself am really lax on taking photos of stuff that I've built, I've actually built two or three of the Cape Cod style weeders for people and never got a picture. So I've had to use a bunch of photos from my style book, I guess. You know, or my idea book. And so that's where this photo came from. And the nice thing with this Cape Cod weeder is that it'll cut both forward and backwards. It's what they call a scuffle hole. And it's literally, it's one of these cases where the way it's made is the metal itself, you'll heat it up and the probably, oh, let's see here. You'd probably take about the first 2.5 or 3 inches of a chunk of rod. Again, in this case, it's about, I'd say, 3/8 of an inch diameter again. Might be 5/16. But you take and you hammer that flat, and again, like I mentioned for the dandelion digger earlier, the dandelion digger, I'd said you just basically use one side and you hammer it flat. With this, what you want to do is take and hammer it on both sides. You know, you basically flip it back and forth. And again, you'll want a nice long oval shape. And actually, what would probably work even better would be to basically hammer it round, or hammer it to a round point, if you can, when you're first working on it, before you start flattening it. That'll save you some grinding time or cutting time. But you want to get, again, a long flat oval. And again, if you hammer the edges of it all the way around, once you get the basic shape there, it'll make it easier to sharpen it, you know, to shape it and sharpen it. Once you have a long thin point on there, you can go ahead, heat it up again, you bend her out to about a 90 degree angle, and, you know, finish sharpening it, put it on a handle, and you'd be able to use it. And again, like I have in the notes here, you know, it's a scuffle hole, and you can turn it on its side like it's shown here, and, you know, work it to, you know, cut weeds out. If you got really deep ones, pound that point in and cut them out that way. And like here, it's like I said here, you know, if you properly make it, you'll have a slight back angle to the blade. In other words, the point is sharper than 90 degrees, you know, that you bend it around. Okay, next thing down here, again, this one I just basically throw it in here. Probably next week or the week after, I'll go ahead and be talking about a few more of the easier things one can make for in their garden. But one thing that you'll need if you're doing a new garden this year, or even an old one, you'll need some sort of row marker. And the way this particular one works, it's, let's see, how it's almost an hourglass shape in there. Obviously, you can't see it all because the twine is wrapped on there. But the two horizontal pieces, they're basically drilled through. And on the upright shaft, you can have like a little teeny hole drilled through there where you can, basically where you'd have two long, what look like eye bolts type of things. The holes you drill into those cross pieces are just large enough so the upright shaft can slide down through it, slide a washer up, and pin it, and so it can turn freely. And the other piece, which, like I said, looks like a super long eye bolt, you tie your one end of your twine to that, you poke the other end into the ground, and you can literally pull your row out. So you got a straight line for planting. Like I said, I'll get more in detail on that in a week or two. Okay, now if we go down here a little bit, this here, I've talked about, you know, Japanese hose and Dutch hose before, and what this is some pictures of a Dutch hole. And the length on this here, this one here is a fairly short one. It's like it says here, this is about 18 inches long, and the blade from point to corner is, you know, roughly 6 inches. And there is a Japanese hole. And like it says here, you know, it's unknown whether or not these tools, you know, originated in Holland and made their way to Japan, or if they first were created in Japan and made their way to Holland. You know, there was traders going on, you know, back and forth. Or I should probably say probably around the Horn of Africa and up, you know, for a long time. And so, or it might have even just been a straight parallel development. That happens as well. And again, like I have here, you know, what they have in common, the two types, you know, they're both light, thin blades, and it's an unequal triangle. And it, basically what it is it's a right triangle. You know, and, you know, it's a fairly nice thing. Now, the biggest difference, I should probably go ahead and mention it again like I have in the past, the biggest difference between the Japanese and the Dutch hose is the diameter of the shaft. The Dutch ones have a tendency of being somewhat larger diameter. The Japanese, they didn't have a real large, steel industry, you know, several hundred years ago, and I think the Europeans probably had an edge on them on that. So that's, like I said, so it's that's basically the difference between the two of them. So let's see here. Yeah, I'll just go ahead and continue on here. Okay, so here we go. We have tools. Obviously, there's the large, you know, garden forks that people think of, you know, usually four or five tines, you know, that you use to dig, you know, potatoes out of the ground with, or beets or carrots or whatever. But also, in a garden, there's a lot of smaller hand forks that are used as well. This particular one, this was made from a 3/8 of an inch rod. And this was the way this one would have been made is they would take two pieces of rod, one a little bit longer than the other, and then they'd be welded together and then again forged until it was basically brought down to about the same size the whole way to the end, where it could be, you know, fitted with a handle. And actually, the place where these pitches came from, they basically used a lot of file handles. They work good. You know, a person can take one of those and drill it out a little bit, and they make a real fine handle. And that that silver ring around there, that'll actually keep the end from splitting. So if you have to, you know, bore the hole out a little bit more than you think, as long as you're not going through the metal, you should be in good shape. And again, these here, the way these are done, you've got 6-inch tines on this particular one. They're about an inch apart. And so you have, you know, sharpened, you know, two-prong fork with a little bit of a bend. Again, a little bit of a bend that helps with the strength, like I mentioned. And also gives you a little bit more for leverage. If you're digging something, I'll pop it out of the ground that way. And let's see. Oh, yeah, that's right. This other note here. That is also called a Jekyll weeder. It was a lady out on the East Coast who invented these, and her last name was Jekyll. And that was back in, I believe, about 1880. So let's go ahead a little bit further down. This actually, I believe, is also another, you know, Jekyll weeder. She also had a hand in designing this one. And this is a three-prong fork. And again, you know, similar, you know, kind of a similar design, except instead of having, you know, two pieces welded together and you thin them out, this particular one, you basically take and make like a squared off horseshoe, and you know, obviously you want to forge your points on it, and then it's welded to the cross piece, small bend in the handle to give you a little bit more of a leverage thing again, and you know, you go, it gets put on the handle. Let's see here. Let me do this. Check my time here. Okay, so we got about 20 minutes till, so I think since I had promised that we were going to get some other music here for people, I'll go ahead and get that taken care of. And I don't remember who it was last night. I know it was one of you ladies who had asked me about both Jimmy Dean and with Don Williams. So, I'm going to go ahead and slip both of those guys in here. And so, again, this will give me a few seconds break here so I can kind of rattle around, get my thoughts together, and we'll continue on after that.
Big John. Every morning at the mine, you could see him arrive. He stood 6 foot six and weighed 245, kind of broad at the shoulder and narrow at the hip. And everybody knew you didn't give no lip to Big John. Big John, Big John, Big Bad John. Big John. Nobody seemed to know where John called home. He just drifted into town and stayed all alone. Didn't say much, kind of quiet and shy, but he spoke it all. He just said hi to Big John. Somebody said he came from New Orleans, where he got in a fight over a Cajun queen, and a crashing blow from a huge right hand sent a Louisiana fella to the promised land. Big John. Big John. Big John, Big Bad John, Big John. Then came the day at the bottom of the mine when the timber cracked and men started crying. Miners were praying and hearts beat fast. Everybody thought that they'd breathe the last except John. Through the dust and the smoke of this man-made hell walked a giant of a man that the miners knew well. Grabbed a sagging timber, gave out with a groan, and like a giant oak tree just stood there alone. Big John. Big John. Big John. Big Bad John. Big John. Without his strength, he gave a mighty shove. Then a miner yelled out, "There's a light up above." And 20 men scrambled from a would-be grave. Now there's only one left down there to save, Big John. With jacks and timbers, they started back down. Then came that rumble way down on the ground. And the smoke and gas belched out of that mine. Everybody knew it was the end of the line for Big John. Big John. Big John, Big Bad John, Big John. Now they never reopened that worthless pit. They just placed a marble stand in front of it. These few words are written on that stand: at the bottom of this mine lies a big, big man, Big John.
Big John, Big John.
Big Bad John.
Big John.
When I was a kid, Uncle Remus, he put me to bed with a picture of Stonewall Jackson above my head. Then Daddy came in to kiss his little man, with gin on his breath and a Bible in his hand. He talked about honor and things I should know. Then he'd stagger a little as he went out the door. I can still hear the soft southern winds in the live oak trees. I guess we're all gonna be what we're gonna be. So what do you do with good old boys like me? When nothing makes a sound in the night like the wind does, but you ain't afraid if you're washed in the blood like I was. Smell a cave jasmine through the window screen. John R. and the Wolfman kept me company by the light of the radio by my bed, with Thomas Wolfe whispering in my head. I can still hear the soft southern winds and the live old trees, and those Williams boys, they still mean a lot to me. Hank in Tennessee, I guess we're all gonna be what we're gonna be. So what do you do with good old boys like me? When I was in school, I ran with a kid down the street, and I watched him burn himself up on bourbon and speed. But I was smarter than most, and I could choose. Learn to talk like the man on the 6 o'clock news. When I was 18, Lord, I hit the road. But it really doesn't matter how far I go. I can still hear the soft southern winds in the live oak trees, and those Williams boys, they still mean a lot to me. Hank in Tennessee, I guess we're all gonna be what we're gonna be. So what do you do with good old boys like me? Yeah, what do you do with good old boys like me?
Yeah, good old boys like me. How does that go? I think I resemble that remark. I was actually going to throw another commercial in there, but I figured, nope, evening is rapidly running away from us here, so... Actually, I am going to probably just do a couple more of these sections here, and then we'll leave the rest for next week. That'll get me off my keister and let me expand a little bit more on things here. So, next section we're going to have here is 2 and 3 tank cultivators. You know, like I said, the last couple things here, they were forks that people could use in a garden. Also, a thing that's used a lot of times in gardens are hand cultivators, you know, little ones. Obviously, there's large cultivators that one can use, and that's actually, like I said, you know, this week I was going to basically do, you know, hand tools, and ones a little bit further down are a bigger hand tool. So what we'll do is we'll just do the little hand tools this week. So here we go. Now, like I have here in the notes, that, you know, a lot of times it's hard to find 2-tine hand cultivators. You know, single ones, they're sometimes called cobra head cultivator. It's a single tine, quite wide, bent around just like these are. But you can find those on occasion. But 3 and 4 tine ones are a lot more common. And again, these are basically, well, there's 2 of them here. I try and give a couple examples of everything. The first one, that's probably, again, made out of like 1/4-inch rod. And remember before on the fork, I talked about how they take 2 rods of unequal length, weld them together, again, forge them out so it's not too thick to go inside the handle, and basically make it where it'll fit the handle. After that, they'll heat the points up when they're, you know, still straight, flatten them out, basically have a diamond shape there, you know, looking at it from the front, So it's just basically pointed. And again, you grind the edges on there to give a good sharp edge. It'll cut your little weeds and such off. Same principle works for like the three tine ones. This is a little bit different one. Again, similarly constructed to the three tine fork above, except it's a little bit narrower. And in this case, the center one's a little bit shorter. Basically, like you take your middle three fingers, you hold them up, you got it. All the points are about the same height, so you can actually work an area really well. And again, it's, like I said, done the same way, except in this case, before you weld it together, you do your points on there, you do your bends, you weld it together on the, to weld the head together. So, let's see here. What do I have in here for notes? Yes, you can till both sides of a row of seedlings, you know, to get the little weeds out, and, you know, for working among plants that are spaced at regular intervals, you know, bedding plants or tall growing herbs and perennials. The three tine one, again, that's for, you know, working up an area that's, you know, area between the plants so you can chew it up, break up the roots of any weeds that are starting to grow. Obviously, you don't want to till real deep because if your roots of your plants you've planted are spreading out, you don't want to root prune them, you know, because that'll stunt their growth. Now we're going to get into some stuff, some pictures of stuff that I made. I actually took these pictures today. And these are kind of my variation on the, first off, on the two tine cutters. And, again, got a little bit better a view on it. So, the first one here, these were, like I said, these are ones I make myself. I salvage out garage door springs. We have an overhead door company here in my hometown. Out of heck with it. I'm going to blow my OPSEC here, I guess, because I'm sure the big boys in the alphabet groups all know who I am already, anyhow. So, I live here in Ripon, Wisconsin. Birthplace of the Republican Party. And matter of fact, a couple of my ancestors were there at the first meeting where they chartered, and one of them acted as, what would you call it, the scribe or the recording secretary. So he wrote down their whole doggone charter, and he was the first one to sign it. So, now, like I said, had to get that out. So, anyhow, like I was saying, we have an overhead door company here in town, and they're constantly replacing the springs that are on overhead doors. And these springs can be anywhere from, you know, the fairly light duty ones, which you're going to see on a home garage door, all the way up to springs that are probably 7/16 of an inch in diameter, you know, for the cross section on the metal. These particular things were built with one that had a 3/16. This is basically a home garage door size spring, which I heated and straightened to give me, you know, stock to work with. To build these, I used, let's see, 32-inch long pieces of it. I'd heat it up and basically make it into one really long, skinny horseshoe to, you know, so I'd get my length on it. Then at that point, with the horseshoe section, I'd have my loop up there at the top, obviously. I'd heat the first 6-8 inches of the bent over end in my forge, get that to a really good red hot heat. You know, you don't want to get it too cold. You know, you don't need to get it up to yellow or white because then it's going to start burning. But if you just take it up to a good solid red orange, it's a good working temperature for spring steel. And I clamp it in my vise with the loop up. I put a chunk of rod through the opening. And wearing gloves, I just go ahead and give it about, you know, half a dozen turns to give me a nice handle that's a little over 6 inches long. Once that's done, you know, I tweak it to make sure it's, you know, good and straight. I take it out, let it cool, and then at that point I'll go ahead and spread out my V. You know, like I said, both of these here are basically laying on their backs. And the bottom one is roughly about the size opening open it up to. Work with it. At that point, I'll go ahead and hammer my points in, like I said. And if you look over to the right side here, on the next picture to the right, you can see where the stuff is fairly flat. You know, I don't take it like it's paper thin, but I take it to basically work my way down. The further down I go, the flatter I get it, and thinner I get it. Again, it's then shaped to a point. And once I have both sides done, I'll take... I actually have a little fixture I made that's made out of a piece of about a 2-inch pipe coupling. Black iron pipe coupling, by the way. It's not galvanized, remember? Every time I get the chance, I'm going to mention, if you're going to work with heat and fire and try bending things around something, or you got to avoid the galvanized stuff. Galvanizing, it's pure poison. But anyway, I bend my angles around, or bend my bends around to where they're equal, sitting at about the same height. Once that's done, then I go ahead, again, back to the left picture here, I can go ahead and adjust how wide I want it. And like I said, this particular one here, I'd actually taken one of them, spread it out a little bit, just so you can kind of get the feel for how the thing looks. Generally, what I do when I make these, I bend them back together so I have about a 2 to 2.5 inch gap in between the points. Yeah, as the old joke goes, works fine, lasts a long time. And last one to go, since we're really rapidly running out of time here, is I also make 3-tine cultivators. Again, kind of going back to what I said before about welding things. In this case, what I do to make these, I'll make my long bend, and again, those two outside prongs going all the way to the loop at the end. That was, like I said, a 32-inch piece of 316 spring steel. And once I got my loop in there, what I do is I'll take my third leg there, and that gets welded in between the two. And once that weld sets up, I clean it up, I heat it up, I twist the handle the same way. And again, the steps for bending and sharpening the points, it's done the same way as the 2-tine cultivator. And I'll just go ahead here and say, if you look down here below, next week I'm going to go through the process, and I'll actually expand these instructions a little bit more. It's for making my version of a Dutch-style hole. And again, that's done with spring steel. And it's designed for us who are getting a little bit older and aren't as flexible. So with that said, I think, yes, what I should probably do is I should go ahead and put a little bit of exit music in here. And then at that point, I should probably segue my way out of here. So with that said, thank you very much for joining me here in the Tinker's Shop for Saturday evening, the 25th of January of 2014. Again, thank you very much. Have a very good week. God bless. And I hope you can join me here next Saturday. Take care, everybody.
I was a highwayman. Along the coach roads I did ride, sword and pistol by my side. Many a young maid lost her baubles to my trade. Many a soldier shed his lifeblood on my blade. The bastards hung me in the spring of 25, but I am still alive.
I was a sailor, I was born upon the tide. With the sea I did abide. I sailed a schooner around the Horn of Mexico. I went along the world and made so little blow. And when the yards broke off, they said that I got killed. But I'm living still. I was a dam builder across a river deep and wide. Where steel and water did collide. A place called Boulder on the Wild Colorado. I slipped and fell into the wet concrete below. They buried me in that great tomb that knows no sound. But I'm still around. I'll always be around, around, around. Right.
other side. I'll find a place to rest my spirit if I can. Perhaps I may become a highwayman again. Or I may simply be a single drop of rain. But I will remain. I'll be back again and again and again.
Hurricanes, tornadoes, western firestorms, earthquakes, financial collapse, government upheaval. What happens when Walgreens closes? Whom do you turn to? You turn to Kat Ellis and myself, Chuck Hudson, on the Medi-Chat and learn how combat medicine and alternative herbal remedies can help keep you going. No matter what, the Medi-Chat live 7 p.m. Pacific, 10 p.m. Eastern on the Just Measures Radio Network.
Shield and